We got very, very close very, very quickly, I think in large part because we were running so much together.
He brought double meat Quiznos and like 64-ounce Diet Mountain Dew. I was like, I'm in heaven. I want to marry this man.
We got to work together at Twitter, which was kind of fun. I think the assumption was like brother and
Yeah,
sister.
brother and sister.
I used to tell her we should just like start making out in the middle of all hands, scandalize everybody because they think we're really siblings. Having three kids definitely convinces you that it's all nature and very little nurture. I think we will have failed, and by we, I mean like AI, ChatGPT, the industry in general, if it isn't true that every kid growing up all over the world has a basically free one-on-one, like personalized tutor.
I can't tell you, even through like how busy we are these days, and now we're three kids later and at home and two big jobs. Like, if you at least have those shared weird little things, like it means if nothing else, we eat a sandwich on a Saturday together.
Today on Modern Relationships, I'm joined by Kevin Weil, the Chief Product Officer at OpenAI, and Elizabeth Weil, Founder and Partner at Scribble Ventures. Together for nearly 20 years, Kevin and Elizabeth met while training for a marathon and have since built intertwining careers in Silicon Valley. Up ahead, you'll hear them talk about navigating work transitions, their parenting philosophy, and strengthening their relationship through every chapter, from carefree grad students to juggling demanding careers as parents of three.
Kevin and Elizabeth, welcome to Modern Relationships. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for including us.
So the conceit of the show is we bring on amazing, successful, aspirational couples like you guys on the show and hear your stories and draw out lessons that other people can learn in terms of how to pick great partners, how to make marriage great, how to balance relationships and work. And maybe we'll just start with your story, how you guys met, how you came together.
Okay, I get to go. I tell the true story. In nutshell version, so I came out to the Valley 25 years ago for Stanford undergrad econ, master's in engineering. And well, so I during my master's, I joined the triathlon team because for $30 a quarter, you could swim at a decent time, like at 7, not at 5 a.m. That man had done his undergrad at Harvard and came out for his physics PhD at Stanford in theoretical particle physics, I think. So I wasn't in that lab much, but fortunately, he was also on the triathlon team. And I went to practice one day and told the coach I was going to miss the next day because I was running a marathon. And she said, "Oh, that guy in lane three in the green cap, he's running the same marathon." So the rest is history. We'll spare you all the details, but that was the meeting site. And then we're very quickly together. Then,
Well, it took a few months.
well, it took a few months, but that's
Yeah.
still pretty quick. And then we moved 2 months after that. And then we were engaged 3 months after that. And then we bought our house 3 months after that. So cool. We kind of got it done, and we've been in Portola Valley like old people since we bought before we were married.
The marathon story is kind of fun though. So we met up beforehand at like the race expo, and she kind of showed me around because it was her hometown marathon.
This was after he hadn't responded to two emails from me about, "Hey, I hear you're going to be running the same marathon." No, he's snubby, because all he wanted to do was see if I was fast. So I got this like cold email of like, "That's cool. I'm going to do this fast."
I don't believe I said that.
Yes, we did one.
Use proof. So it was like the second marathon I'd ever run, but it was the first one I'd really like prepped for, and I wanted to try and hit a certain time, and I knew the way that I was going to hit this time was if I keyed off of this group of elite female runners, who I wasn't as fast as, but like then slowly fell off that pace because they were going to run consistent and I wanted to figure out how I could run, a consistent pace. So we start the race and we're like 10K in, a decent like quarter of the way. And one of these elite women falls off the pace. And you're taught when you run to never watch the person who's falling back. You like keep your eyes on the people that are up there. So I'm like slowly catching this person. And as I catch and pass, I'm eyes ahead, not looking. She goes, "Go, Kevin!" And look, and I'm like, "Elizabeth, what are you? Oh, okay. Like, how are you?" She's like, "Oh, I'm just feeling good. See you later. Have a good race." And I knew what she was trying to run. She was way under her pace, and I'm thinking in my head like, "You are effed." And And but in, you know, I was like, hey, have a good race, see you at the end. And so she actually did end up having a good race. And then at the end of the thing, we're like walking around together, just friends. And I met your brother-in-law. I met your mom. I met like your sister. Okay. There are all these photos of, you know, me and her with her parents in the background. It's run each other for a day and a half at that point. So who knows?
Yeah, rest is history. I put up with him now for, I don't know, that was in 2005. So that's a hell of a time.
Wow. And so what explains the why you guys moved so fast? Is it kind of just like when you know, or like, because you guys were still pretty young.
Sorry, I know the answer to this question. Bro, yeah, you did know, you know. We fight about that all the time too. So part of the story. So on 2 days after that marathon, we said, he said, let's get lunch. So we went to Pluto's. Whoever knows Palo Alto, I dearly miss Pluto's. But hot date for lunch for salads. And during that time, I was on my last quarter of Stanford and I had basically like 20 independent study units. So I didn't have to do a whole lot. And I told him over that lunch, I was thinking of going to Australia for the quarter. And right there at that lunch, mind you, this is this like fourth day we've ever like known each other.
No. You're like months off.
So anyway, well, kind of.
You are. It's in, okay. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Fast forward a few months. We didn't speak for a couple months. And now we go on our second lunch ever at Pluto's. And I say, I'm going to go to Australia. And he says, oh, I've always wanted to go to Australia. Like, could you wait until after graduation? Mind you, like, we're not even dating yet. Like, this is a second lunch ever. And I was like, that's presumptuous. And I had my job all lined up at Menlo Ventures. And I'm like, I can't ask to Menlo to start late. But anyway, I got the guts to ask. And they said, fine. And then I said, dude, we got to put our money where our mouth is. If he's really serious, I want to see us buy our tickets. Like, not this, like, oh, we should go someday. So we planned a night for him to come over and buy our tickets. And he came over. He was armed with bringing dinner. He brought double meat Quiznos and like 64-ounce Diet Mountain Dew.
True grand style.
I was like, I'm in heaven. I want to marry this man. So he had me at the Quiznos and the Diet Mountain Dew.
One other thing that I actually think, there's all that. And we were running together all the time back then. Almost every morning we were running together. And there's something about having an hour together where, you know, you're going to fill the conversation or fill the gaps with the conversation. And also you're not staring at each other from across the dinner table or something. Somehow there's something, it's easier to talk to people, I think, when you're both staring ahead. And I don't know, we got very, very close very, very quickly, I think, in large part because we were running so much together.
Fascinating. And did you have a sense for like what you were looking for in a partner? Or were you just like living your life and you guys just became close and then?
No, I mean, I'll take the first one. You can weigh in. But the reason I was saying like the months in the previous story were important is because I was dating somebody when we ran a marathon and we broke up in the middle. So I didn't want to get that timeline mixed up. But
he's very honest.
But I had dated that person for a long time, like since high school. And when we broke up, I was like, this is great. I'm in grad school. I got to like write a bunch of papers and do a bunch of physics. And I don't need any women in my life. I'm just going to like work out a ton and do a lot of physics and it's going to be great. So I wasn't looking for anything. And
yeah. And I didn't have like a serious boyfriend all through Stanford, which is kind of like, you know, it wasn't a premeditated thing for me at all. I was not like out for a husband or out for a, and honestly, it happened way earlier than I thought because I've always been so independent that I was just kind of living my own life. And I'm like, I wake up at 5 or 6 every morning and I run and I'm like, I've never wanted to be that one that like sleeps in and goes to brunch. It's like, I do my very own thing. And for some reason, our weird, very own things merged up. So I think it was easier to say, yeah, this is faster than I thought, but it sure works.
It did happen really fast once it started though. Like whenever we started dating in April and
we were engaged in January.
Well, yeah, there was that. But then also you came to meet my parents like in 3 weeks later, just not because we were trying to introduce to each other's parents, but there was a trip we wanted to go on. So you met my parents, I met yours. My dad happened to be driving by Sacramento where her mom is, so we actually set them up to meet, and they had dinner together. I don't know what they were thinking. If our kids do that to us, we're going to be like these weirdos. Somehow it made sense, and I know at least my parents were like, after you came to visit, my parents were like, okay, that was a different Kevin. I guess we should get used to this now. Glad we like her.
And so when you see couples that are together, you know, who are about the same age you guys were for 3 years, 5 years, and not yet married, are you guys like, Shado, get off the pot, or what are you guys doing?
No, I'm just one of those that's like, life's too short to not be with a person that like brings out all the good things and you like get to be you around. And so I've never been a fan of like trying to architect the meeting. It's like, go do what you love. If you love yoga, if you love running, if you love going to bars, like just do what you like to do. And I can't tell you, even through like how busy we are these days, and now we're three kids later and a home and two big jobs, like if you at least have those shared weird little things, like it means if nothing else, we eat a sandwich on a Saturday together. And I just think there's something like, find the little stuff, because the little stuff after, you know, those first few hot years, like, is what really matters. So just be you.
And is it, if you're thinking about like, you know, you guys have been together 20 years, it seems, do you think about the chapters of your, is it basically like pre-kids, post-kids, or like, how do you think about the chapters of your relationship?
That is a good question. So we bought our home right away. So I feel like that first chapter was this amazing, like, nesting, but acting like old people, where we threw dinner parties every night and I cooked like six nights a week. We made an outdoor cinema and we invited friends over. I threw like clam bakes because it was like Wednesday, you know, and we had this like fun adulting time where all you had to do was wake up and go to work in the morning and be selfish and think of you. And in our weekend phase, we're how long of a run can we go on? 4 or 5 hours. And then which sandwich do we want to go eat? And how much Diet Mountain Dew do we want to
take? Those were the days.
It was heaven. And
an extra bike ride in the afternoon just because.
It was heaven. And we also got to run every morning together, talk about our days. And then there was, yes, the kid phase and the baby phase. And that was a big wide awakening. And then there's no going back. So kid phase turns into toddler phase, which turns into now. Tomorrow is 3 sporting events, 2 sleepovers, 9 kid out, like a play date. And now that, yeah, there's no going back. That genie does not go back in the bottle.
But they're fun.
Yeah. And how do you guys make it all work? Well, maybe we start on the women's side. Like when, Elizabeth, when you're talking to women who are younger and they're trying to say, hey, you know, I want to have kids, but I also want to have a career, but I'm also like, kind of unsure, like, let me hear about your story to help me sort of make sense for how I should think about how my 30s are going to be. What do you tell them?
And I do talk to a lot of women about this, because first thing I would highlight, which is like the truth, it's never a good time. And you're probably going to pick the worst time, so don't try to architect it. And I have my 2 pregnancies, because I have twins, were worse times in their own, you know, interesting, weird ways. But we even were like this. Neither of us were like, oh, I just woke up and I'm in my baby phase and I want to be cuddling someone right now. It was like, no, it's very well, we envision being parents and having children. So if said children are going to exist, something has to happen to make that happen. And we knew we wanted a family. So I got pregnant. I was actually the first pregnancy at every place I've worked. I was the first pregnancy at Andreessen Horowitz. And didn't tell anyone until I was 6 months pregnant. Didn't know what to expect. They were great, but we had to put a policy in place. There'd never been one before. Our first one was a wild surprise. Again, like you can't pick it and you can't time it. He was 3 months in the NICU. We were very much wide awakening to parenting, spending more time in the hospital than at home. And then with the twins, again, a high risk pregnancy. I found out I was pregnant the day after I started a brand new job. Again, worst timing. You know, 9 months later, you're going to be very out. And so it's never a good time. But I think, and parents probably very much feel this. You're never going to be more efficient until after you have that kid. So just own it, do it, and it all works. Think on your parents.
When she was telling me about the twins before I officially knew, I figured that. So I went to see my parents, and I took our, at that time, 2-year-old. And she was like, oh, I'm going to come down a couple days later, which was not normal. So I was like, oh, something must be up, but whatever, you know, we're pretty independent. So she wants to stay an extra couple days at home, whatever, sure. So 2 days later, I go pick her up at the airport. And she, as we're driving, she's like, hey, you should pull over. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, no, just pull over. And so she pulls out an ultrasound and she's like, hey, look, we're pregnant. And I'm like, oh, amazing. So cool. Like, you know, getting all excited. And she goes, with twins. Like, it folded over and there's another kid in there. So that was
not the best time. And it was like the day after I started at 137 Ventures. And again, those guys like weren't even married at the time. I'm getting ready to have twins. And it was an entirely different vibe. Like I pumped in my Uber on the way to the office. Like, the meeting doesn't stop when you need to just go pump. So I remember wearing like this over my stuff and being at the table and you just go with it. So fortunately, I just like haven't cared all that much, but you make it work.
We'll get right back to the conversation after a word from our sponsors. Modern Relationships is sponsored by Relationship Hero, your personal relationship coach. It's an open secret in Silicon Valley that people are using these relationship coaches. Over 100,000 users are happy they tried Relationship Hero. You might be wondering, what is it like to talk to a relationship coach? Well, here's Jackie Pugh, a senior coach at Relationship Hero.
That's a really good question. Okay, I actually just got off a call with a client who was getting mixed signals from his ex. So she's the one that broke up with him, but then she kept sending him these really heartfelt, long emotional messages at midnight, and then in the morning would act like nothing ever happened.
We've all been there. How do you recommend handling something like that?
So what we would do is we would want to hear exactly what's going on so we can help discern, is my client's ex, is she just trying to process her emotions and she's doing it via text message? Is she potentially trying to keep my client on the back burner? Or is she actually trying to reconnect? And if she is, then I help my client decide, you know, is this something that he actually wants to do, reconnect? And if so, why?
Thanks, Jackie. If you want to try your first one-on-one or couples coaching session, go to relationshiphero.com/modern. You'll get $50 off your first session if you use our link. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/modern.
Did you think about taking any like years off, or is it just like, no, let's just do it all?
No, I think there's always been times where you're like, why am I doing this? This is nuts. But I know how much work is important to me and how I want to be. I mean, I have a big three criteria that I've held since I started working. It's like, one, work with the people you want to be around. Two, do it in a location that you thrive and that you don't have a long commute. And three is, am I learning? And whenever those are out of whack, like, then you make a move. Why I think being at Scribble now, like, I'm the chooser of those things. And so I'm never going to have to get another job in my life, I hope. But with those three, it's like very orienting. I don't know.
I don't know. Whenever you've even said anything about it, I've always encouraged her to stay in the game because I think she is happier when she's working and there's like something bigger than her that she's fighting for and getting to, work with portfolio companies and you just,
and I think
you're a happier human when you have that.
And you guys get to work together a bit.
Yeah. And I tell young women this too. You just need to really be vocal about your non-negotiables. And those can happen even through having careers. And you pick what is important. And if it's going to the 11 o'clock story time, that's your thing. And you can do that. And I also got this advice from a great friend. We did a calendar coding and color coded. And so it was, you know, the work bucket, the kid bucket, maybe the health. And
you shouldn't look at it every day and see like pure balance, but instead extract to the week and then to the month. And if your month looks good, you might have had crazy travel and not seen that baby. But then when you extract, you have, you know, more of that. And I think it just helps put it in perspective. And then also the thing that every parent tells every younger parent is it goes so fast. I can't believe I have a 10-year-old and 8-year-old twins right now. It feels like yesterday, like I still have some of their baby clothes. But now we're looking toward, wow, in 6 years, we're going to have a 16-year-old. And I'm going to be so thrilled that I have an orienting job to go to that I love. And things that keep my brain moving because it happens so fast. And I'm glad I won't have to be trying to get back in. So it's hard, but...
And now that they're 8 and 10 and they start to kind of get what it is to work, they look and they go, Mommy's the boss of Scribble.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, everyone's work decision is personal. So there's no judgment in any direction. But I just think that's awesome for them growing up.
They know I make $100 a day. So
yeah, they're starting to get really curious about money, but they kind of don't understand how it works.
Mommy makes $100 a day.
Yeah. You've also had, you know, different career paths from Twitter to Insta to Planet to OpenAI and others before that, of course. You know, Elizabeth mentioned her three principles. What has guided you in terms of your transitions?
Actually, they're remarkably similar. Probably the one that isn't there is for me is location, in the sense that I've been commuting to the city for like most of my jobs for a long time. So I'm kind of an idiot on that front. I very much am jealous of Elizabeth's commute, but the same time, like I love what I have gotten to do. So I want to work with people that I love. I think you become more like the people you spend your time around. So spend your time, you know, work with people that are going to make you a better version of yourself. I want to work on something that's bigger than me, you know, work on something that when I'm 80 years old and I've got a grandkid on my knee that I'm going to be proud to say that I contributed to. And I want to be learning just like Elizabeth. Yeah, I'm happiest if I feel like I half know what I'm doing and half have no idea what I'm doing and need to constantly like catch up. You know, I'm competitive if I feel like I'm falling behind or I'm not able to contribute in the way that I want to. That's what makes me work the hardest. And that's kind of when I'm the happiest. So I've been really lucky in my career to get to do that and also to work at a bunch of places that, you know, everywhere I've worked is long hours and all that, but they've also been flexible. If I want to go to something in the middle of the day, I can make that work. I'll make it up in another, you know, weird hours in the evening or something. But I feel very lucky. The tech industry as a whole is pretty good like that. And it just means I can spend more time with my kids maybe than I otherwise would have been able to.
One thing that's really cool is you guys came up together, you know, having met sort of before your career started. It's cool that you guys got to see each other and support each other on the way up. One, because it's cool in itself, but two, because it gets harder as people get locked into their careers to make time to meet other people or they, you know, the dynamics just change a little bit once you're already on the way up. And we all, have friends who are in that situation.
Yeah, we were super fortunate. I mean, when I met him, I thought I was going to be marrying like a middle of the country college physicist professor. I had no idea. And again, it's like, if you stick to what you like,
still might.
You know, it's still mine.
But your cards right.
It was that, you know, when I was at IVP, we made the investment in Twitter and heard about them needing to hire somebody for their analytics team. And Kevin's like one of those weird people. He's like, I could learn that. And he got that job on the spot and then started. And I realized 6 months in how much fun he was having, and I joined him at Twitter. But it was to your point of we grew up together. Like at that point, no kids. We had a tiny apartment on the same block as Twitter. Every breakfast, lunch, and dinner was spent with Twitter peers in that early days, in those building days. And those were the weddings you were going to. Those were, you know, the vacations you're going on. And it was really fun to go through that, you know, that progression together. And again, like being able to say yes to travel and stuff like that. So it is. But yeah, did not think I was. Yeah. You just, again, stick to your principles that are important and who knows what you're going to end up with.
She's way more outgoing than me. All of my jobs actually came through her.
Oh, wow.
I just tell people I ride her coattails.
He's pretty good. But
how do you guys like work together, collaborate together? We'll get into like divide and conquer. But what is it like to sort of have been in the same industry and have a lot of...
Well, we got to work together at Twitter, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. And in the early days, like, he started when I was 30 people and I was about 50. In the early days, like, people knew because we were super small, but we scaled so fast. So we scaled from 50 to 300 people in less than a year, and then to 2,500 in less than 4 years from my time. And so once we started expanding floors, like, sometimes we'd meet in the kitchen to leave together and people were like, you guys are married? And it was,
I think the assumption was like brother and sister.
Yeah, brother and sister.
I used to tell her we should just like start making out in the middle of an all hands, vandalize everybody because they think we're siblings.
So we were on different teams. So we never, but there was one hot second. He was the PM and I was the PMM on some initiative. And for so long.
Was that Twitter Commerce?
Yeah. Formerly known as Twitter Commerce. Formerly known as Twitter Commerce. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times can you try that? So it was the back in the fun days there. And then I went on to Andreessen Horowitz from there. And then Kevin stayed at Twitter longer and then went over to Instagram. And where was I during that phase? I don't even.
137.
Yeah, 137. Yeah, now we're here. And now it's just divide and conquer on all the things. But we still have kind of that shared tech language. I'm glad we're not like in the exact same thing. But I was talking to somebody this morning about this, that even at the worst of times when we really are two ships in the night, you at least have like some shared language of what the other one's kind of shipping in the night doing. So it helps.
When, let's say, you know, a couple like 10 years younger than you, you know, just starting the parenting journey, but a similar background in terms of both professionally successful, comes to you and you're like, hey, I want a mental model of how to think about like divide and conquer. You know, some people are, it's really important to be equal across everything. Some people are like, hey, you're more skilled in this area, you handle this. I'm more skilled or like doing this better, I handle this. What would you tell them?
I think we've done a few things well, and like some you learn from too, and some that we haven't done well. But I think kind of owning your zones, like being upfront about like what you hate doing. Like Kevin hates unloading the dishwasher of the Tupperware. Like, and so like kind of,
it's always wet.
Little things. And also like, I don't like to eat the garbage out. And Kevin, and as our kids have grown, he's kind of owned sports. That means like signing up for sports. He's going to be the main driver. He's going to meet like the, and I do so much more at school, and I'm the teacher conferences. I teach art on certain days. Like, so we have some of those like broader zones where you kind of know. I think there's something that is inevitable about the mother load, and I will fight till my death on that. There is, you know, I have this working plan in my head every day of like, which meals do I have to cook? What do I have to get? And oh, wait, Matthew needs bagels, and this has to get picked up as a prescription. Like, there's just something about it. So I don't think it's equal, but I think you respect some of those big pieces. So one of the things I say about Kevin, like, he's so, so busy, but he's not like going and getting beers after work. He's doing what he needs to do and then having any last cycle, maybe with the kids and then barely with us, but it's fine. And also on weekends, he needs work time, but it's not like I need the whole day I'm going to go sit in my man cave. It's like he's going to work that in between a basketball game and between a soccer game. So I really respect that.
I think we're good at, of us are perfectly fine being solo with all the kids, yeah. Which I think matters.
That evolves as they age.
Yeah. But I've always, I mean, because we both had work travel, yeah. And it, I don't know, I found like that frees us up. It means if she's got friends that are going to go do something cool for a weekend or something, it's totally fine.
We talk about it.
And, I don't know. Both of us are happy doing that. It actually is interesting too, because you get a different slice of the kids when you're solo with them versus when both parents are around. So I don't know. I just think that leaves us a little more freedom and independence.
Yeah. And then the other thing, my sister gave me this advice early was, if you leave for a day, don't be that wife that the mom puts out like, they eat 14 Cheerios at this time, then a half a cup of Goldfish, then like, don't do that. Let each do its own. So it might mean that they have a ridiculous lunch when they're on dad's watch, as they do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But that's allowed. And it means I have the freedom. I can leave without having that, oh, I have to over-architect this. And then the other advice on the other thing on when you have kids in school age things and volunteering, I got the other great advice that only volunteer where the kids can see you. So yesterday I was working in the classroom. I'll go for the Valentine's party and cupcake decorating, but don't just like send the bag of marshmallows. And I think I've gotten a lot more mileage out of the volunteering and work I do with my kids because they see that. So yeah, there's no panacea for all of it. And then also I think we're very independent, but have your own friends, have your own hobbies. Like, I have a ridiculous Lego habit, as you can probably see. And that's something I do totally solo, not with the kids, totally me. I walk with a lot of my friends and talk. I have a great, great running buddies. So have that thing that you don't need your partner for that'll boost you. And that's helped keep me sane too, especially through momhood.
You know, people who are listening to this podcast are very smart and thus very successful and thus can afford help, which I just say as a segue to how have you guys thought about what you can delegate versus what's not worth delegating or just sort of infrastructure right now?
A slice of life in our house too.
Go for it.
So first of all, I grew up in Sacramento, single mom, divorced, a second grade teacher.
Your mom, not
my mom.
Yeah,
we did not have help. I never had a babysitter. There's a whole lot more you can drill in there. And I was also a very independent kid. I was riding my bike to swim practice. I got my first job the day I turned 15 and a half with a work permit, and so different just philosophies. We have the means, but I also didn't want my children to be raised entirely by others. We have a phenomenal nanny. We've been the very fortunate family to have a consistent, phenomenal nanny for a decade now. She does help our family operate in the, you know, biggest and littlest form. But I didn't want that to be 24/7 round the clock. Our kids ride their bikes to school. And they're, you know, pretty independent little kiddos. We love doing stuff with them. We'll go on family hikes on the weekend. So we didn't want it to just be like all of parenting was outsourced, but we do have that layer when we need to fall back on it. I think you also go through phases. We had lightweight help on the weekends for a few hours when the kids were babies. And it meant Kevin and I could unapologetically get our runs in and maybe do a little bit of work and then meet back.
Maybe you just see each other.
Yeah. And we didn't really, though. It just meant we worked and ran. So there's been some of those hits, but we're pretty light. What a glimpse into our life as far as help goes. We have a cleaner that comes every other week. We have our nanny that comes in the afternoon and is a great shuttle bus driver for too many sports practices after school and light housekeeping. And then I'm usually home by 5 or 5:30. I try not to do a lot of dinners out. Kevin usually has more, but that's the only time, you know, to kind of do the sync with the kiddos. And then in the morning, I wake up. We both wake up about 5. I put out breakfast. The kids know how to make it. I leave. Kevin goes and works out. I leave to go run. And the kids get themselves breakfast ready, set Alexa for when it's time to ride their bikes to school. And then they come by my office to steal a piece of candy on the way home and they're alive. So it's a pretty simple existence right now. So we lean on help, but we're pretty lean. And I like doing dinners and stuff. So
I think the other thing that we've been really lucky with our nanny is she is open to taking our kids to her house. Like if we both happen to be traveling or if we have an opportunity to go take a weekend together. She'll like they go live with her and like they'll speak Spanish for the weekend and they'll go to church and they'll do all sorts of things that are different and they get a different slice of life and they love it. And that's afforded us some measure of independence every once in a while to get a weekend or if she needs to be traveling and then something comes up and I need to be traveling, it doesn't cause a fight because we can actually, you know, we're very lucky to have an outlet like that where our nanny can take the kids to her house.
And we don't have parent support like in a consistent way that I very much envy.
That would be nice. I wish. Yeah.
One of my close friends has like an org chart for his like head of household. Like he hires a lot, but it feels like you guys are relatively modest in terms of sort of wanting to do a lot sort of internally, says, you know, yourselves while also getting support when you need it.
Yeah. And I think there's no answer, right? Good judgment. There's no like right answer, wrong answer. It's just whatever works for you and your family. But I think this is what's worked for us.
Say more about your parenting philosophy, or if anything non-obvious comes to mind. You know, one question I personally have for couples who have the means is like, how do you think about giving your kids opportunity or advantages while also making sure that they're, you know, not shitheads?
I scarred my kids already. So if you asked our kids, we have no money.
Yeah, well, I hope they're not listening to this. Just kidding.
Yeah, I make them
$100 a day.
They're not getting the, like, don't just run past the grocery store and grab 12 primes on your way home. Like, I'm ruthless, and to the point I'm probably scarring them, and I'm probably doing it because I didn't get any of that growing up. So we make them choose and we make them prioritize, and they know they have a savings account. But then when you put it in perspective, like Matthew came to my office this afternoon, he was talking about new lunch ideas. He's like, I have an idea. How about on my bike ride to school, I stop at Robert's Market every morning and I get a BLT for lunch? And I said, okay, that's going to get pretty expensive. He said, well, how much is a BLT sandwich? I said, about $15. And so when you start to put it in the real language for them, it starts to choose. And
he knows it's like an infinite amount of money.
And so I think like having some of that conversation, and then like being able to, and I talk about this on affording experiences, but this was an expensive experience. And with also the way, like with commitments, like you made this commitment, so you're going to do this. You just don't wake up not feeling like going to that show or do it. And you've already.
Or going to your sports practice, yeah. Like you're on the team, you go.
So we do talk openly, but we mostly eat at home. I think eating out was a privilege growing up, and I didn't want the DoorDash lifestyle that we could, you know, establish to really, you know, be what they're used to. So I think it's just a balance, but being open to talking about it and knowing like mommy and like why Kevin and I could ride business class is because that's like, we've earned that versus this is a privilege that you just get to do because you're part of our family. So we probably scarred him.
I think the other thing that we did, again, for better or worse, no judgment on any, like I try not to ever give people parenting advice because it's so individual, but we kind of took the philosophy of if something's going to kill them, then we'll get in the way. We'll like make sure that they can't, you know, eat bleach when they're small, et cetera, like fall off of a high place. But if something's just going to like skin their knee, or they're going to fall down or like hurt themselves a little bit and be fine, like we'll let them do it. We didn't cover all of our tables with, you know, the safe corner things. We didn't plug all of our outlets. I mean, maybe we should have. Maybe this is, I mean, I'm gonna get canceled for this. But I mean, they kind of learned to fend for themselves a little bit that way. They became more independent, and yeah, they hurt themselves a few times, but nothing serious.
They can scale lampposts faster than any tree frog out there. It's true, and I think that also. So I grew up as a Science Olympiad nerd for 6 years, and my event was the Rube Goldberg device, which I am the 1996 national champion. For folks who don't know, Rube Goldberg devices are those weird, crazy contraptions that like solve something and they do something. And our kids have always like, I had to give up that I'm going to have a perfectly clean house. And instead, our house is mayhem, but our kids live in it, love it. They have tools, they have cardboard, they have like every day in our house is a Rube Goldberg device. And I really did have to give up the fact that like it is at peace, but it means any given time there's just like crafty, weird science stuff going on.
And Roger, the hot glue.
I named all of our devices. So Cutter is our big industrial cardboard cutter. Roger is our hot glue gun. That is my other parenting tip. They take more respect with their things that have names. Don't know why, but it's weird. The other thing we've done as a family, when we had like a down minute where you wanted to sit on the couch, which we rarely do, we started this thing called Mystery Doug. And Mystery Doug's actually a real guy on YouTube or something. And he answers easy kid questions in like 3 minutes. So something like it's simple, why is the sky blue or whatever. So now we call it, let's go Mystery Doug tonight. And we'll sit down and we let the kids ask random questions. And we just use YouTube on the TV and like look up random answers. So I think we've raise pretty curious kids, and that means they get a lot more independent too. So yeah, We've had this philosophy of just kind of be, but I know I'm going to burn my furniture when they're 16. And I had to get okay with that. Otherwise, I would be totally, yeah, constraining them.
I've always wanted to be the place that the kids like bring all their friends to. So like be super welcoming of them, saying they want to have friends over, they want to have sleepovers. Like you want your house to be the kid house that everyone's, you know, rolling around in at all times.
But that means I had to go buy donuts because we're going to have four kids sleeping over tonight and tomorrow's donut morning. So,
thank you.
Yes.
Are you more like, hey, let's let the kid be whoever they want to be, and if they want to work hard and get straight A's, that's on them, but I'll still love them if they get C's or whatever? Or are you like, no, actually, let's be great.
Whoever they want to be, but they have to work hard.
Yeah. I think very quickly, you do the debate on nature and nurture. Like of our three kids, and like two of them are twins, one of the twins has her backpack packed before the week's over with all of her homework that's done before been assigned. And she's just like that.
She's you.
And yeah. Yeah. And I like her a whole lot. No. And the other two have totally different personalities. I think we want them all to do the work, push hard, like do the math problems, do it. It doesn't need to be perfect. You don't need to have a perfect spelling test, but read your books and do the math and do the stretch that you can. And we haven't, we haven't enforced the, like, you need to be at this college or anything. So I have a feeling, and I was given that, like, do whatever you want to do. There were never any pushes, and feel like we've got a close enough tie with our kids. If there needs to be a push, you start doing that. But right now, I think they're going to turn into very interesting and weird little adults and hopefully do something of redeeming social value. So right now, it's been freaking loosey-goosey.
Yeah. Yeah. Having three kids definitely convinces you that it's all nature and very little nurture. Maybe you can screw them up, but like they kind of are who they are from the minute that they're born, and it's unbelievable.
And then the more that they get, so one of the things I started doing this years ago, and I don't know why, but it works and I love it. I ask the kids what they want to go learn, and I work one-on-one outings around that with them. So Kate wanted to, acrylic paint, and I found an acrylic paint class. Matthew wanted to learn how to throw a pottery wheel. And so we found that. And so I use that as a forcing function to, I love learning random new stuff. And I show that I'm willing to spend on new random experiences like that to teach them something. And like Alex wanted to learn to whittle. So I found a guy that taught us to whittle. And that's been a fun way, both on use of time, but then also, get them smart and other things that they want to learn.
And did you ever consider homeschool or other unorthodox sort of educational experiences? And I'm curious also, you, Kevin, especially now that you're at OpenAI, like, do you, the world's changing. Do you think they're going to go to, traditional college? Have you thought about their education?
We were both public school kids. So, and we're very lucky to live in a place where the public schools are good. So that's kind of just always been our default. I think if one of the kids comes to us and says, I really want to go to, name your local private school, we'd talk about that with them, and that's fine. But I don't know. We try and augment what they do at school in some cases, like with ChatGPT and tutoring, and try and get them interested in other stuff.
Like we do math problems in the car. Like we love wordplay. And so we're always like doing like Scrabble, but then that means. So we haven't done an intentional.
Yeah. My dad always said the greatest gift that he ever gave to my brother and I was to teach us to love reading. And we're very lucky. All three of the kids, they don't even want to talk to us in the car. They just bring books. Yeah. And the minute we start driving, they're just like heads down in whatever they happen to be reading. And I love it, because if you love reading, you can take yourself all over the place. You can learn anything.
That was a gift. Encouraged. Yeah. My mom taught them to read during the pandemic. And that was a gift that keeps on giving. But then it is fun watching them interface with ChatGPT and Alexa. Like Alexa solves if it's a Scrabble word or not. So you see the evolution of their interacting with technology, and now is starting to unlock ChatGPT and what they can start to explore and learn. So it is wild, but I think we're going to go through a huge education wave too with all things AI. And yeah,
they're just like, of course there's a human level AI that I can talk to in every room of the house. Why wouldn't there be?
Yeah.
You're thinking is that 10 years from now, it's, you know, assuming the great, you know, remain great students, that it's likely to go to a great college. Like, that's still going to be the default for.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not so sure. I think no matter what, I think we will have failed. And by we, I mean like AI, ChatGPT, the industry in general. If it isn't true that every kid growing up all over the world has a basically free one-on-one, a personalized tutor. And that doesn't mean that traditional school needs to go away. It probably needs to evolve to go along with it. But there's something to like going to school, being with other kids, having a teacher, et cetera. But all of the data shows that personalized tutoring makes standard deviations of difference. And the AI is good enough these days. Like, I really want to see a 2 billion user individualized tutoring product. It doesn't exist yet, but it seems inevitable, and the world will be a much better place when it does.
Yeah.
So kind of reading from what I'm gathering from what you're saying is that you're basically, whatever your parenting philosophy is basically like, hey, we want our kids to be self-driven or driven, work hard, humble, grateful, and, you know, sort of public school vibe, but give them, you know, help accentuate their interests and give them, you know, opportunity where we can while keeping those, you know, fundamental values true. Is that
if they hit those five things that you just laid out, whatever they like, self-driven, curious, humble,
kind,
I will say that we've succeeded.
Yeah.
Because they'll go figure out whatever they want to do if they have all those things. And I think confidence and hard work are two of the most important things you can have. And if you have those, like a lot of other things will open up, you know?
And I think the one thing we haven't touched on that we do lightly show that is we're both like involved in giving. And Kevin's on the global board of the Nature Conservancy. I'm on the board of Lucile Packard Children's Hospital. And we talk about that work with them, and they know the reason I do that work for the hospital and the reason like they've been there to, and they can see some of the work we do. And it doesn't, you know, it's not totally clear. They're still young and they don't totally understand what that means. But seeing that you give some of your time to other things and other people, I think there's a, you know, weaving that in at the right times of young kiddos too is important.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. My parents sort of had a similar philosophy and of sort of they, you know, they pay for my college and my schooling, but they also made me feel like I was really self-made. Like I was on my own in my career. And I feel like it's like the best of the both to some degree.
Yeah. My mom always said, to whom much is given, much is expected. And that's, I would love to impart that to our kids as well.
And for me, after I got into Stanford there, we weren't quite sure how we were going to make it work, but I ended up getting a full ride scholarship from a private foundation that was going to pay not only my tuition, but my books, my room, my board, like everything, and even my graduate work. And this small crop of students that received this scholarship, they said, this scholarship said, we're backing self-driven kids. It's not to go into business. It's not to go in to medical. And seeing what that crop of adults now have gone on to do is phenomenal. One scores film for Spielberg. And some, you know, and it's just, somebody's a world-class comic book animator. And just seeing the weird professions that people fall into when you aren't told you need to be a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, you find your own path.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's funny, you made this joke a couple of times, and my dad makes this joke all the time. He says, as soon as they had kids, my mom stopped paying attention to him in the same way, or, you know, couldn't dedicate all of her time to him. Let's say the same couple who's 10 years younger, who's about to have kids, says, hey, we know that kids changes the relationship because there's less time, attention, et cetera, stress, et cetera. What advice would you have for married couples who are about to have kids in terms of, you know, keeping their relationship great?
I think one thing that we have been inconsistent about, but when we have like spurts of doing it well, it makes a big difference, is having a consistent date night. And I think like so far in 2025, we've been off, probably because I've been traveling too much.
He says we've been off.
Figure to marriage, blame.
But we keep it lightweight and consistent, where it's been held on like one certain night a week. And we aren't trying to go out late and go to a 17-course tasting menu. It's literally like sometimes we go to this little
Shack Deli, we can get a bottle of wine and a mediocre sandwich. And it means you do it. We have been inconsistent now, but I like that. And the philosophy is, let's not talk about the kids. Like, let's talk about other things.
Try and like have a menu of topics, like a shared, you know, Apple note that we on or throughout the day, so that we get there and we're like, okay, we've got these 19 things.
But he never does it. He's always going.
I do sometimes.
And then the other thing I would say is having your own non-negotiable. So I would not be a happy person if I wasn't getting my morning run or workout. So having something like, when you know, what's the secret to success, to like, oh, you got a workout today? I didn't. Like, even if it's not both a workout, like have your non-negotiable that you both do independently. So there's not that resentment of the horse trading, because in the early days of kids, it's hard. I remember coming back and being like, you were gone for 78 minutes. I was only gone for 60. And that was back when the kids were a lot harder.
Yeah. So. We're kind of lucky, I think, that our like outlet is similar, you know, running, cycling, that kind of thing. So at least we get each other crazy.
Yeah.
My hopes.
It's amazing. You guys have been together for 20 years. What are other couples that you've learned from or admire, or what have you learned from them more precisely?
Well, one that jumps to mind, and I think we both share this. Actually, it was Todd Francis. He was at Shasta Ventures. I always said, wow, you have older grown kids and I love spending time with you. And he said, we live in a very normal home. This home we like first bought when we were married. But we have raised kids, and what we've invested in is experiences together and the gear to do those experiences well.
Yeah.
It means that they're skiing in interesting places, they bike riding in interesting places. And I've just always liked that philosophy. We're kind of simpler on the sports side right now with young kids, but I've liked that. So that's one.
He was also the one that gave advice that stuck with me too, which is like, when your kids are small, if you're going to talk to them, like, get down on their level, you know, sit with them. So you're not this, you're right there with them. I don't know, that seems like a small thing, but it always stuck with me.
Yeah.
I think Kevin and Gayla Compton have always been like relationship goals for us. You know, both accomplished, you know, Kevin's an incredible investor and been very successful and all that. But like, you see the two of them together and they probably looked like that when they were like 21 and dating for the first time. Yeah. They're just like so loving with each other and like gentle and understand. I don't know. There's something about the two of them that has always been relationship goals for me.
And I don't know if somebody else gave the advice, but I really do think there's something about separating your kids and doing some one-on-one time. It goes a long way, and it can be a once a year thing. This doesn't need to be weekly, but I think the memories that are made from that. And then also Kevin and I have a yearly trip that's literally just 3 nights away, but we try to hold consistent to that. We don't overthink it. We go to the exact same place every year. We eat the exact same breakfast buffet and sit on the same lawn chair. But that when there's just something you do, when you know that even if it's once a year, you have that. So I don't know. We're messing up a lot of things, but I think we're doing a few things right.
That sounds like an amazing ritual.
You phrased it at one point, how do we balance all of this? And I was going to say poorly, but
yeah.
I don't know that there's any other way, right? There's just more stuff than can fit in 24 hours. And I think maybe this is like mom guilt. It hits you a little bit differently than it hits me, I think. But there's just no way that you can do all the things that you want to do, like all the opportunities and stuff you wish you could do for work and all the things you want to do with your friends and everything you want to do with your kids and together as a couple. And I don't know any other way than just doing your best at any given moment to try and balance it and, you know, correct any things that feel like you haven't done enough of them recently. It's hard. I know we're not perfect.
But... not perfect?
No. Very much not perfect. But I don't know. I think it's like at least being willing to admit that we're just figuring it out as we go.
V2 is you doing this with our three children.
There you go.
We might hear a whole other story.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, that's the next evolution of this podcast.
My last advice is lower the bar.
And yeah, that's very true.
I've had to be okay with the lower the bar. And tonight I'm going to probably make a frozen pizza because there's going to be a lot of little kids at my house. Have not thought that far ahead. And I just had to lower the bar. There's Sharpie on my carpet. Lower the bar. So I I'm not perfect at.
Be patient with yourself. Yeah. It sounds like you guys are doing a phenomenal job. Is there any last day, the relationship, marriage, or parenting piece of advice or closing that you want to leave? If not, I'm happy to wrap right here. It's been fantastic.
So I was watching the segment you did with Delian and Nadia, and Nadia said something that I really liked, which is just sort of picture yourself in jail with this person, which is a funny metaphor for marriage, but like, but in the sense that, like, barring something extreme, this is your person. So you kind of look at life as like, we're in this together, and we're not going to agree on everything. It's never going to be perfect, but we're in it together and we can figure it out. And, you know, I'm like, wake up every day glad that we're in it together.
Yeah. And I'm like, for that next chapter, I always look at it as kind of that when the kids are out of the house, empty nest phase. And that's when a lot of couples like either go up other ways, or you like, it's your new self-finding. And when we talk about the time, I'm like, I'm looking forward to our post kids time. Like, it's, I'm, and I think there's that, are you looking forward to it? Are you ready to be splitting them? And because it's a logical break. And yeah, I'm like, oh, we have some fun stuff ahead.
It'll be interesting when we can actually say a sentence to each other without interrupting.
It's going to be really weird.
It'll be a weird thing.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I want to respect your time. You built an amazing family, relationship, career. I really appreciate you guys sharing your wisdom and lessons learned on how you guys did it. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I think we're just figuring it out as we go, but
working hard
to say it very much. Yeah.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.